This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Jake, and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who's an active member of AA. Now I'm going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There is no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognize it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Unfortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program from recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record at helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. Would you please introduce yourself and give us a quick sketch of who you are?
Oh, hi, Jake. My name's Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in my early 40s. I've been around AA for about 12 years. But I've only been sober since November last year after relapsing. And occupation-wise, I'm a nurse, and I have three beautiful children. One in their 20s, and the other two are very young, about 2.5 and 12 months of age.
So. Busy family.
Yeah.
So you're from Canterbury?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So when did you start drinking? How did it progress for you?
When I grew up, there was a lot of alcohol in my home. My father was the alcoholic, and my mother, she's not an alcoholic. So, yeah, I grew up around it. The first time I was actually drunk was when I was 4 years old, because I got into the alcohol lying around after parties and or during parties. But I didn't really start drinking until I was about 13, and I'd steal alcohol from mum and dad's liquor cabinet and hide in the cupboard, in my cupboard, and drink it.
Sounds familiar.
And it wasn't probably until I actually got a wee part-time job as a teenager that every weekend I would spend it on alcohol and go into town and buy alcohol before we went into the clubs and things like that. So then it was, you know, my drinking was a lot of fun back then. Mm-hmm. All my friends were doing it, and it just became quite normal. But right from the start, alcohol for me was just changed me, you know. I had no confidence. I couldn't really socialise without it. And so, you know, going to parties and things like that, I'd have to have a few drinks on board.
Preloading before you go.
Preloading. I just changed into a completely different person. It gave me the confidence, and you know, I just felt normal when I drank.
Did you ever feel it was a problem in those early days?
Pardon?
Did you ever feel that it was a problem that you were?
No, I didn't think it was a problem because I don't know why. To me, an alcoholic was someone who, you know, slept on a park bench and drank out of a paper bag. I didn't know an alcoholic was someone who, when they started drinking, they couldn't stop. Or that they had personality changes when they drank. I certainly didn't think I was an alcoholic then.
Right. So you drank for years. What made you decide to stop? What pressures started to come up?
Well, my drinking progressed over the years. My parents purchased a pub. Which didn't help. I was around alcohol a lot there, and I didn't drink a lot through my 20s because I was studying and I had a young child. I had my daughter, so I didn't drink a lot then. But
how old were you when she came along?
I was only 18. And mm-hmm. So that sort of put a stop to my drinking every weekend. And, I just sort of concentrated on study. But when she got a wee bit older and a bit more independent, my drinking really sort of took off. People around me weren't going out all night and staying out till 6 or 7 in the morning, you know. So I started realising that, you know, I may have had a bit of a problem with drinking. At the time, I was living in a wee flat in Addington, and on the door there was actually a sticker that said 0800 AA Works, and I used to come home every morning and see that. And for some reason, that morning I thought, I'm going to ring that number.
How old were you then?
I would think I was about 26.
Mm.
Alcohol was around me and in my family, so it seemed normal.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first rung AA and went along to a meeting, I just thought, I'll just go along. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I don't drink every day. But I need to slow down, so maybe AA can show me how to slow down my drinking.
Yeah, let's not do anything drastic here.
And I went to that first AA meeting. It was in Hereford Street in the old building. I think they were still smoking inside. And there wasn't all these old men. There was a lot of different people, you know, a whole mix of people, and there was another young lady there who shared, and I related to everything she said, you know, all the how she felt lonely, and she felt different, and she'd felt like that all her life, and all that feeling sort of went away when she picked up a drink. And you know, I knew then, and I just, you know, it really got to me that first meeting. I just cried and cried and cried when I realised deep down. I thought, well, you know, I've been an alcoholic. That was my problem. That's why I felt the way I felt all the time when I was sober as well, you know. But it was the drinking and what happened and when I drank that brought me in.
Right. So just to be clear, you didn't really lose your job or lose big relationships because of your drinking. It was just the feeling out of control that brought you to the rooms.
Yes, and all the embarrassment and the shame and the guilt. And I still had a job.
You're nursing?
Nursing. Oh, no, I was actually working in my parents' pub at that time.
Okay.
But I went back out drinking. And I was nursing again then, and still managed to hold down a job. But you know, if I drank all night, I'd ring at 4 a.m. and say to the duty manager, "Oh, I'm sick," in my drunk voice. So
yeah,
I think they knew. They must have known. Had an inkling that, you know, I had a bit of a problem, and it's, you know, you're usually the last one to know yourself.
Right.
Mm.
Well, good on you for finding it so young before the major damage started. So let me ask you, what were the other AA members like to you in those the first few days and weeks? How did they treat you?
Oh, I felt all that loneliness and that terror and, you know, about what I'd done when I was drinking. It just made me feel less lonely because I thought I was the only one that did that kind of stuff. And when I heard people sharing in the rooms about, you know, what they'd done when they were drinking, and they were laughing,
yeah,
which made me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was no pride in it. You know, it was sharing, and honest sharing, and you know, that's. And, it, you know, everyone was really welcome. They told me to ring them. They gave me numbers. So, you know, the third time I came into AA, I just really embraced it. And just went to 2 meetings a day sometimes and made sure I did a meeting every day. I got a sponsor.
So you said third time you came back to AA. So it's 26, 20. You know, I mean, like, what? How many years were you coming back?
I picked up and went back out. I went out for a couple of years and did everything that people had shared about, which I thought, well, I hadn't done that, and I haven't done that, and I haven't done that, because I was listening to the differences and just, you know, hanging on to those so that I could, you know, not be an alcoholic, because it was the last thing I ever wanted, you know. And, you know, I would think, well, how am I going to, what about Christmas time? What about that party in June? What about that wedding? You know, it was, yeah.
Right.
I couldn't live in the day. I couldn't do the 24-hour thing to start with. And, yeah, the third time I came in, I had a massive weekend of drinking. On the Sunday I woke up, and after only about an hour's sleep, and started drinking again, but it didn't really take any of the shame and the guilt and the horror and the realizing, you know, what I'd done. And you know, I had a couple of beers. It didn't take it all away. I just had this feeling of immense feeling of I know what to do. And I rang a friend who was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was also a work colleague. And she said, "Well, come and pick me up tonight at 6:30." And so I went and picked her up. I still had bottles rattling around the back of my car. And I just had this immense feeling of I was going to be okay. And AA was there. And so I guess I really did step one there at that moment.
So from that point forward, after, I mean, you sort of know what the program, the 12 steps require.
Yeah.
You got through, you know, first step, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. What have you done beyond that to ensure your sobriety all this time?
Well, after all I used to do in the first year was 1, 2, 3, 12, 1, 2, 3, 12. And in that first year, I learnt the third step prayer, and I'd get down on my knees every morning and I'd say that. And it was really just like brushing my teeth. And I don't know what I was praying to or who. And then after a year of sobriety, I just hit the wall. I think I realised how big the disease was and that people, places and things weren't going to fix it. Because I was using AA as my higher power. I was using that to get through life and realised that wasn't enough and that I had to start working the steps. So I started doing step four, and I shared it with my sponsor. And
step four being a fearless and thorough moral inventory.
Yeah, so I shared that with her, and then over a few days, I started to look back over my life and actually realise that I had had something in my life looking after me. It was like that sticker on the door of my flat. I met someone later in the program who had rented that flat just before me, and they don't remember the sticker being there, and they didn't put it there. So I don't know how it was there, but for some reason it was there. And that sticker is what got me into AA. You know, I was working in a pub, and I was around alcohol and alcoholics. A lot of the regulars were alcoholics.
So that's why they call them regulars.
I'm not that bad. I'm not that bad. And then going home and drinking to black out, or you know. So that to me was a God job. And I think that was my spiritual experience.
Right.
My first spiritual experience, other than the morning I woke up and rung my friend to take me to the meeting.
Yeah. So how would you describe your sober life today? You know,
Well, I mean, when I was... Years ago, when I was drinking and stuff, I really didn't like myself. I really wanted to change, and I really wanted to have a personality transplant, but I didn't know how to do it. I hated feeling angry all the time, and so today for me, I look at things so much more differently. And they talk about it, so you know, and they say that the road narrows, and I really understand that now. I can't get away with too much now without feeling not right. So And having the intuition to know what the right thing is to do is pretty amazing, because, you know, when I was drinking and I was nursing, I'm pretty sure I drove my work colleagues crazy because I couldn't make a decision to save myself. And I used to say to them, what should I do about this? And what should I do about that? And I don't know if we do this, if I make this, I do this, and then that patient's going to, you know. So, you know, I really was such an indecisive person, but it was just that fear.
Right.
And how I fixed that fear back then was to drink. So now, to fix the fear, I pray.
Right.
Because, you know, you can't have faith and fear at the same time, you know. So I guess for me, that's the biggest thing that's changed. I got married. I didn't think that was going to happen. And my husband's just amazing, you know, and I've got three beautiful children. I don't, you know, if I'd carried on drinking, that stuff wouldn't have happened.
Right.
I would probably be living in a bedsit or sleeping on the streets drinking. And, yeah, so life is so different now, you know. It's not perfect. It's not perfect every day. And I do get bad days, but I know they will pass, and I know what to do, you know, and I have a really good sponsor.
Well, that sounds like a real life.
Yeah, it's a real life.
Mm. So what are your goals for the future?
To keep going to AA,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I know when I go to AA, my life is better.
Right.
You know, when I absorb myself into AA, life is a lot better. So, and I want to help others too, because, you know, someone helped me. And, you know, because, you know, you can die from this disease. So, and I never really took that seriously in the beginning. I guess that's why I relapsed so many times. But, you know, there's so many suffering alcoholics out there. And, you know, if you can get them to one meeting to plant that seed, you'll change their life, you know. So I never look at it as a failure if they just come to one meeting and then they disappear, because I know that seed's been planted, because that's what happened to me.
Right. Yeah, so many people. I hear that same story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They go back out drinking, and in the back of your mind, there's always, oh, those AAs were right.
Right. Well, and you also know that the AA rooms aren't a big, scary place. It's full of normal people like you and me, and no one's going to bite you or rope you in and try and get your money.
Yeah. I used to think it was a bit like Amway. I wondered where all that money was going.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that was just my paranoid thinking.
Right.
And I stopped going to meetings, you know, and I looked at things differently.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Jake.
All right. Well, for our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard, or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web. We're at www.aa.org.nz. Or you can call us, like Kathy said, on 0800-AA-WORKS. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so there's likely one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30. And you can find podcasts of all our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want a drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking. Your prison is